Greetings to the people. Welcome back. We're on the move from the nonsense to the good sense. This is Mike Africa Jr. and this is my podcast where we illuminate the struggles of the people, inform the uninformed, and give you nothing but the truth. On the Move is here to disrupt the system and spark a global revolutionary change. A change is what we need. Like Sam Cooke said, a change is going to come. But like Gandhi said, you got to be the change you want to see in the world. And even though Gandhi wasn't perfect, he said something that was true. And when the power of truth is present, you better respect it. So check this out. Today is a really good day. I am rejoined by two of the most important people in the world to me. My parents, mom and dad, welcome back to the show. How you guys feeling?
Hey, I'm doing okay. Doing pretty good, Ted.
Great.
Dad, you sound great? You feel great?
I feel great.
He's sleepy.
Yeah. I saw y'all taking a little nap over there.
Yeah,
it's all good. You got to catch those Z's when you can sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so we got some good stuff to talk about, some really exciting news, and we're going to work it with Gimme Three. We get the bonus. So this week I went out to Oakland, California, and I met up with Frederica Newton, and the Black Panther Party was unveiling the new Huey P. Newton bust on Dr. Huey P. Newton Boulevard.
Wow.
It was really cool.
Wow. I didn't know there was a Huey P. Newton Boulevard.
I didn't either. Wow. Until I got there and saw it. And you know, I didn't even take a picture of it. But I took a picture of the Black Panther Party Museum that is right down the street and also on Huey P. Newton Boulevard.
Wow.
It was a really, really important day.
That is great.
But when I got there, I saw her. She had her braids in and she was like standing next to the bus. She's really tall too. Like I didn't realize that she was going to be like not far from my height. Right. But it was umbrellas everywhere because it was raining like crazy. I don't know. They said I brought the rain in because when I got there, it was like raining like 7 o'clock in the morning until like late that night. We were standing there in this storm, windy rain, hundreds of people undeterred. She pulls back the Black Panther Party flag that they had draped over it to cover it.
So right? Who's she? Who
Frederica Newton. And then they pulled it back and it was this beautiful like bust.
Wow.
Right. Of Dr. Huey P. Newton. And it was just really like really powerful to see it, but like the symbolism of it, mm-hmm. right? It was just amazing. And then while we're there, like, you know, Fred Hampton Jr., he's there. I didn't even know he was going to be there. And Jamal, Mumia's grandson, he was there. I didn't know he was going to be there. Mm-hmm. Just ran into a lot of cool people.
Wow.
We're going to talk about that a little later. Like maybe I'll get her back on the show and start talking about that to go more in detail. But yeah, anyway, so that was one really cool thing that happened.
That's great. Yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's really nice.
Really nice. I got pictures of it. Check out the Instagram. For the people out there who want to see what it looks like, hit me up on Instagram at Mike Africa Jr. and you get a chance to see it. And also go to Huey P. Newton Foundation on Instagram and you'll get a chance to see some of the pictures and the people there, the hundreds of people and the 100+ Panthers that were there. Like it was really powerful. And they were very gracious. Like I'm not even a Panther. But they treated me like family, you know what I mean? So that felt really good too. Everybody was so warm and inviting and they were like, yo, when are you going to come back? And I was like, we're going to have to hook it up because this is a really special thing that I want to continue to be a part of.
Yeah, that's movement. The way it's supposed to be in the movement,
yep.
man, right?
Yeah.
Movement is family.
It's supposed to be, yeah.
That's the way it's supposed to be.
There you go. So give me two. Ladies first?
Ladies first.
Come on, mama.
Okay.
Put the mic a little closer.
All right. Okay, I wanted your dad to go first because it was his trip.
Okay, ladies' choice. How about that?
Ladies' choice, dad first.
Well, yeah, while the same time you went out west, we went west ourselves, I guess. Yeah, to Western PA, to Pittsburgh, where I had a friend. I have a friend that I met at Huntington Prison while I was there. And he's been home since, he did 12 years. He's been home since 1992.
Uh-huh.
And we're working on a project.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're looking up some folks that...
Don't give it away now. But you're working on a project.
Yeah.
And you got a chance to see your friend.
Right, I got a chance to see my friend and catch up with him. we stay in touch. You know, it was the first time I've seen him since the wedding, actually.
Uh-huh.
Because he came down there for that. And, you know, he's been doing some really, you know, some really good things, man, in terms of business. Mm-hmm. You know, he started, he got out 92, making 10 bucks an hour, working, putting in gas lines, you know, for the cats, for the gas company. Uh-huh. Yeah. And within 8 years, he started his own business, you uh-huh. know, and he started with one truck.
Yeah.
And now he has over 70 vehicles.
Now he got a fleets.
He has fleets. He has garages. He has several businesses. That one company that he started with one truck, now he has over 100 employees.
Wow.
And yeah, man, he pays them really nice wages, and 40% of them are minorities. He hires, makes sure he makes an, you know, it's not much of an effort because he just, you know, try to get good people.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of them happen to be ex-convicts.
That's really special.
And so he opened up his home to us. He wasn't even staying there. He just gave us his home.
And his other home, huh? Do you have a lot of friends that are doing good like that, that you stay in touch with?
I have quite a few, actually, you know.
But before we go too far into this gimme three, Mom, what you got? Something that made you feel good? Because I didn't do the whole introduction of gimme two.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what it is. People know what it is. People, they think all we do is protest and all of that. But we got good things going on in our lives.
Yeah. And coming off of your dad, the trip, that was my gimme one, because along with that, while we were in Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. I went to see some of my friends who are also up there and who are also, I befriended at Cambridge, and like six of them. And uh-huh. we all had lunch together. It was awesome. Like, they're doing so good. They've been out 20 years. Some of them been out 10. Some of them been out 8 years. Some of them just got out. One of the lifers, in fact, she just got out 8 months. And in 8 months' time, she has her own apartment. She has two jobs. Mm. And one of them, she got two jobs. And one of them, she works in construction.
Wow.
I got a picture of her with a hard hat on. And she works in construction. She's just a go-getter. She never gave up.
That's my slogan. The never
one
that, give up.
Yep. And every last one of them that we did, you know, that we did the work with, that's what they said. The key to the success that they have is never giving up. And it just felt so good just seeing them all. I mean, it's just awesome what they're doing. Like, they open up programs, halfway houses for women and men. And it's for the people that are coming out, trying to help them with drug addiction, trying to point them in the right direction of getting a job and just helping them. Those are two of the women that were there that they're doing that together. And it's just so, Let's Get Free is working with them from Pittsburgh. Etta, she was there. It was just really awesome to have that reunion. And we're going to be doing mm-hmm. some more work with them too. So that feels good.
That's amazing.
And she's been at it for over 20 years.
Etta, yeah.
Rana,
yeah.
Rana, her name's Rana?
Her name is Rana Davis.
Rana Davis?
Moore. Rana Davis Moore is her name. And then when the
Moore Davises.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And then when the one girl got out, she's been out 10 years, she joined her and they work together now. So it's been just an awesome, just they all doing really good.
And she was talking about it while she was still in prison. Talking about doing that work
while she was in prison. She had the vision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she started putting it into action.
She put it into action.
And she never gave up.
Never gave up.
Wow. We might be related. The vision thing, the never giving up thing, and mm-hmm. the Davis thing. Look at that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that y'all got to experience that. Y'all got to see it. And, you know, I'm sure you don't get homesick from prison, but I'm sure you do miss your friends.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. We met a lot of good people, man. Yeah.
And we talked about the good times we had while we were there, you know what I mean? But of course, we'd rather be here, but yeah.
Well, you know, that brings me to this conversation that we wanted to talk about, right? This thing about hope. I personally feel that, like, people use different things to motivate them and to keep themselves inspired, right? And hope is a big word. And probably before y'all came home and before some of the other political prisoners came home, I always looked at hope a certain way. Like, to me, hope is nothing more than just like people that don't have the power to make the thing happen have, right? It's kind of like faith. Like, you don't know what's going to happen. You can't control what's going to happen. It's something that you have to hold on to in your mind, because you can't, you're powerless to make the change that you need. I don't know, people that are hungry that have a refrigerator full of food, they don't hope to get a sandwich, they just go make a sandwich, right? They just eat. But people that are in prison, they hope to be free one day because they don't have the power to free themselves. It brings me to this thing that happened that's really important to me and to the activist community. We learned today or yesterday that a longtime political prisoner, he's been in prison for over 50 years. Russell Maroon Schultz was granted compassionate release. And as of right now, he is on his way home from prison. I talked to his son and I talked to his daughters. And the hope to be free and then the actual freedom that comes, right? For a person that's just coming home from prison after all that time, what does hope even feel like from prison? You know what I'm saying? Like when you're in prison for that long, what does that look like from prison, Mom? Like just hoping.
That was a hard word for me to think about, digest, and to really try to analyze it and put it into words, because I'm thinking hope. That wasn't an easy word to really to figure out, because hope almost was like what is it? Is it a wish? Is it a thought? Is it just in a like an empty physical thing?
I mean, that's kind of how it felt to me.
When I think about hope, I think about a wish, like something that right. I want to happen. Something that I want to happen, whether it be good or bad, you know, like people that.
What do you mean, whether it be
well,
good or bad?
Well, some people hope for bad things. Some people, well, I ain't going to say bad things. Oh, some people right. hope for people that, okay, you did me wrong. You know, you honking your horn at me. You know, I want to get out and knock you in the head. You know, I hope I get the chance. So it's like.
Misery. Like, <yep. That's, laughs> Mom, you been driving.
In a word, my brother.
You just start driving.
Misery. Yep. Yep.
Without getting
power. All right.
But yeah, it's like, so hope is like a wish of something and your either imagination, like I'm hoping for this, I'm wishing for this, I'm wanting this to happen for me.
That's why I always felt it like it was for people who didn't have power, because it's a wish.
I can see what you mean.
Right. But why is it such an important thing to think about?
I think it's important though, because holding on to something that you really want and you really, really, really want, whether you get it or not, it can take you far. It can take you far. I can tell you from my own experience. My own experience was I was facing 100 years in prison. I didn't know what was going to happen. At the beginning, I thought we was getting out, you know, really quick because I had not killed nobody and, well, the whole story. However, after time went by and, you know, we were sentenced to 100 years, time went by, years went by, a decade went by, 2 decades went by, 3 decades went by. So I'm thinking, wow, are we really going to get out of here? What's going to happen? Because the parole board kept denying our release. So, you know, you start thinking a little differently, like, wait a minute, this wasn't what I was thinking was going to happen. So, but faith kept me going because I have seen so many things that seemed impossible that happened, that didn't seem like or felt like it could happen. So that gave me faith and gave me something to hold on to. And hope, as you said, is almost kind of like a sort of faith or like a wish. And that's what I did. I just delved into anything that I could do that's going to keep my mind occupied, you know, whatever work I could get, whatever program I could get in, whatever reentry, whatever I could get into to keep my mind occupied, and just kept that going. I just kept it going and just put one foot in front of the other. I took chunks of time. I didn't do one day at a time like people said. That was too hard. I took my time and put it into chunks where I could do 3 years of a program or 2 years of a program.
That doesn't seem like hope as much, I guess, to me. But that, I mean, I guess maybe my idea of hope is just different. Was that what it was like for you, Dad? Like, was hope an important thing? And did you use it that same kind of way?
You know, you always hope to get out. You know, you hope that all your efforts were not in vain. You hope that you'll get to see and feel and frolic with your children at some point, no matter how old they are or how old you are.
Okay.
You know, and you hope that you're not consumed with bitterness that it took so long. You know, you're just grateful that you were given an opportunity to get out. It is wonderful news about Maroon, man.
It is.
So
Maroon, you know, he has stage 4 cancer. And when I saw his son come out of the courtroom, by the way, for the people out there who don't know, Russell Schultz III and Sharon and Teresa and I, we've known each other for decades. I saw the videos that Hate56 did. To see Russell come out of the courtroom, even, he knows that his father has stage 4 cancer. And he knows that it's only a matter of time. But the happiness that I saw in Russell's the third face when he came out, and when I talked to his sisters about it, they were very, very excited and hopeful that they get a chance to see their father at home, that he gets to see his family at home, despite the fact that he has less than a month that they're expecting.
And sure, they'll take, you know, whatever. That's why I said, you know, the whole thing about hope you're not consumed by other emotions, you know, you're just so overwhelmed to be home and be amongst your people that love you and respect you, you know, and treat you in a manner, you know, that everyone would like to be treated. Just overwhelms you, man. So you don't even, you're not even thinking about things that people who may fight not to release you or to see you released may be fearing that, you know, okay, well, you know, I don't want to put my career or reputation on the line to let someone go who other people may use as something to, you know, make sure they're not reelected or something, or put in a position to whatever, you know.
On that note, earlier we talked about people that had been in prison for years and they've been home for years, and they are positive, contributing members of society.
Well, see, that's another thing. Even his release, they're releasing him because, like you said, a compassionate release, right? So they feel he's near his end, so they're releasing. But if they paid any attention to that brother and what he was doing for years, you know, and the mentoring he was doing of folks that came through. And listen, man, he won a suit because he had been in the hole for 30 years, 30-something years.
In solitary confinement?
In solitary confinement, yes. And as a result of the lawsuit, they awarded him $100,000.
Uh-huh.
Which was astounding, you know, because anybody would have just been grateful to get out of there, out of the hole. You know, not be in a situation. Whereas even more dehumanizing than being in prison itself, you know. But he got that $100,000 and he gave it away.
He gave it away to who?
He gave it away to prisoners, to groups out in the street that was doing positive work in the community, to, you know, people he thought would do, you know, some good for some other people. You know, that's when the tablets first came out in the jail. Right.
Uh-huh.
So he bought dozens of people tablets so that they could communicate with their families and keep in touch with, you know, and he was always talking to people about being, you know, a responsible person and, you know, a responsible father, you know, and these are some of the talks we had with each other, man. And, you know, he's such a really good influence, man. Ask Ghani. You know, they talk all the time, and, you know, you see the kind of work Ghani's doing. So he was a really positive influence, man. So, you know, when you talk about people stopping and having a different take on how violence is besetting our neighborhoods and communities and why you should stop, you know, and how important it is, how urgent it is to, you know, heal and as a community, you know, as people. He would have been a very, very positive influence, man, with something like that. Very positive, because he was the same way in prison. And the effect that he had when people around him, they may have thought he would have been, you know, just radicalizing people. But no.
Well, the radicalness.
The violence that they may have attached to it.
Uh-huh.
You know, his was thinking for a change, certainly.
Right.
And that was the radical
right.
thought.
Right. Because it radically changed people who were that way into being good people that now praise him for encouraging them to make that change. And they came home and they, Salim and Ghani and a whole lot of other people came home and they hit the ground sprinting.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And sprinting to help other people.
To help other people.
A lot of them trying to control. I see them on TV. I don't know who they are, but I see them on TV. And they're like out in the streets with Krasner. And they talking about, you know, trying to stop the gun violence and trying to stop the black on black crime. And, you know, people trying to just help the neighborhoods. And I'll hear Mike say, I know that guy. I know who that is.
That, you know, so. Yeah. See him on TV?
Yep.
Recognize him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, you know, so that's what I've said. You know, you don't want to let the other side consume you, because you know the kind of person he is and you know the kind of effect he would have had for years on our communities because of the respect he garnered. And it's great to have him home. It's a shame that he didn't have more time home.
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
know, and we feel the same way, obviously, about our folks and, you know, in particular Chuck, you know, when we're
right.
thinking about things like that.
Did Chuck know Maroon?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they spent, you know, they was, you know, years together in the hole. And when you have hope, and when you're talking about hope and determination, your mom mentioned what she'd do and what she'd attached hope to. You know, you have to attach your determination to it, you know, not just like a wish, but something you're determined to make these things happen. You hope that they happen, sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they told Chuck that he couldn't have paper, you don't have access, because you're in a hole, you don't have access to legal books and paper and all this, you know. So on special diets, they would pass out your meal in a paper bag. Chuck filed a suit on a paper bag.
He filed a lawsuit on
a paper bag and request slips. Request slips is request to staff that, you know, you're denying me whatever.
Hold on, wait. Because this is going over a lot of people's heads, I'm sure. It's going over mine.
Yeah.
Let me just get this straight. Okay, they bring you a special diet in a brown paper bag?
Brown paper bag.
All right. And a request slip is a slip that the prison provides you if you want to ask for something.
I like to see, I request some legal books because I'm working on my case.
Anything you want from the prison, you get on a request slip. Want a bar of soap and you're in prison, I need a bar of soap. Now, that's not how it works. They don't do that. But I need whatever you need. You write it on that request slip. You send it into staff and they will either get back with you on the request or in person or not.
So now what you're saying is they refused to give Chuck paper because he was in the hole.
They refused to give Chuck paper because he was Chuck.
Okay.
And he might have been sounding about something else.
So if he's confronting them about something else, they're just going to try to limit and restrict him to as much as they can to punish him.
Right. And they may not have even given him the request slips. You know, other guys, you know, may have requested request slips and they gave it to them. And Chuck got it passed to him. But he didn't have any paper. And he didn't have any writing utensils. And so he was, you know, he wanted to file a suit about that.
So he wrote all of his legal information on a paper bag and request slips and filed it. And did he win, you said?
And he won.
And he won.
And he won.
A loss.
He filed a case.
A lawsuit
on a brown paper bag.
A brown paper bag and request slip.
Okay. I don't know what prison officials are like, but I kind of have to imagine that they gave him some points just because he filed it on the paper bag.
Well, see, when he mailed that, it just goes through the mail system. It don't go through the staff anymore.
Uh-huh.
He filed it.
So whoever picked it up.
He put it in an envelope and mailed it. The judge seen it, or the magistrate was the first one to see it because it went through the mail system.
Let's just take a step back for a second.
Yeah.
Let's just imagine for a minute. Let's close our eyes and just imagine for a second. What was the response of the magistrate when they saw this brown paper bag and his legal information?
I can only imagine because, but when he got it and opened it and it's a paper bag and, probably some grease stains on it and everything. He got it.
That's what you call never giving up hope, Chuck.
Right. And he won several cases. You know, the one where we're in the hole for refusing the TB shot.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept us in for a year. And they said they were keeping us in there indefinitely until we took that shot. And Chuck filed a suit about it. And the judge's response was, he's right. You can't keep them, so what? If you don't want to take the shot, that's. Know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So they agreed with him and said, okay, well, they set a time on it. They said, okay, well, 1 year. And Chuck had like 2 weeks left.
Mm.
So now I guess that's like to thwart the repercussions of them having violated his rights or whatever. But he won a case.
Well, let me just say one thing about hope. Hope is like, and all the girls, and including Mike's friend, when we went to Pittsburgh, the one thing they all said was what kept them and what is keeping them going down and what their accomplishments and success was just never giving up, never giving up hope. And hope to me is like almost like music.
Music.
Yes. A person is, they're just going about their daily life in prison, okay? And you just go through the norm and you have all this time and somebody says to you, well, you know what? They just now overturned this ruling. The Supreme Court just overturned this ruling. And they're saying that if you were sentenced at the age of 17, then you have a right to be able to appeal it and to be able to get out. And the hope is there. Oh, my God, this might be a chance for me. So the hope is there. So music is kind of like the same way. You go along your routine and you may be doing some exercises. And then all of a sudden you hear the music. You be like, oh, shoot, yeah, like, let's get it. Because it's like a motivation is what it is. It's like a motivational spirit, a motivational feeling of towards something that you really want to make you feel happy. That's how I feel about hope. It's like.
You know what I liken hope to? Comfort food. It feels good to think about, to have, right? Mm-hmm. And it can be good for your soul.
Yeah.
But dealing with it the wrong way can take you out. I don't know. Throughout my life, for me, hope has been like depressing a little bit.
Mm.
You know? Because for me, it's like, ain't nobody coming to save you. And if you get something, be grateful for it. But hope. There's too many times where I hoped and it didn't work. So it's like, you know what? Fuck hope.
So hope let you down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, yeah, mm-hmm. it's that comfort food. It's like, yeah, it's good for you. But man, that shit giving me blood pressure issues.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how it felt for me.
Yeah, I think hope has to be mixed with determination.
Yeah, I agree with
you
that.
You know, it's not just a thing that you're, like you mentioned earlier, like faith. It's not a thing where you're just praying for, something that you're, along with the thought you have, like freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're doing things, you're putting things in motion to make that happen as well. You know, you're not just resting, okay, oh, I hope this is going to happen, not doing anything about it yourself.
Not doing anything to make it happen, just praying somebody makes it happen for you.
And for sure, that's
one day. I hope one day.
And that's for sure what I didn't do. I didn't just sit back and say, I hope this happens, and hoping anything I could get my hands on and get my feet into, I got into it to try to make it happen.
I really like that. I really, really appreciate that. Hope has to be mixed. Mm. It has to be effort behind it to achieve what it is you're hoping for. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes it a lot sweeter, too.
Yeah, so you reach out, you put out feelers, some things you want, right? You're in prison. And you need certain particular help. You know, you reached out to someone and maybe they had an idea, and then they'll like downplay it. Man, look, man, this is not going to work. And there's, you know, and if you listen to that person, even though he's in that field, and you're not, you're like, no, come on now. Why not? You know, you're always saying, why not? Won't you just try this? Mm-hmm. You know, and if he don't want to do it, try him or her. You know, if we had someone like this, you know, this bulldog, then finally, you know, we just start trying to do it ourselves with other people's help.
It works out.
It works out, you know. So you just don't stop, man. We have no choice but to keep on going. Mm-hmm. And no choice, you know. So
what did you do to keep you hopeful, like that kept your hope alive?
Faces.
What do you mean faces?
I wanted to see those faces outside the walls.
No, I'm saying what did you do to keep your – oh, that was it?
That was it.
Just make it –
Yeah, I wanted to – listen, man, I didn't want to – so many people that I knew and loved – you know, had passed away while we were in prison. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm talking about outside, of course, you know, my parents and Debbie's parents and my siblings and all, but, you know, people I've met in prison, you know, that I loved. You know, these guys, man, I had been with them.
Longer than you were with other people.
Yeah, longer than I had been on the street.
Right.
I was only on the street for 22 years. I was in prison for 40. And some of these guys I've known the whole time I was there, you know, and kept in touch, like my friend that we went up to see in Pittsburgh. So those things just keeps that motivation going. You know, you don't want to be, you know, it's almost like they've won if you don't get out. Mm-hmm. You know, when people want to see you just, you know, like the one cop said, you know, we think that even after they die, their corpses should stay in the prison cell. You know, so it feels, it would almost feel like if you did die in some measure, they won. Mm-hmm.
So just keeping up the fight and the resistance and So you talked about that too, Mom, like the things you had to do to keep yourself going. But what was it that you did to keep yourself hopeful?
The hope that kept me going was really, it's almost like a hole that was in my chest and my heart. And all I could do was think about being home with y'all, like being home with imagining, like, you know, like y'all imagining holding you, imagining being with, you know, being with Wit and just imagining. Thinking about what I was going to do when I got home, how I was going to make things, you know, make up for it, or how I was going to do things better. And sometimes after so many years, I would be like, you know what? I'm not staying in here no more. Now, how I was going to get out, I don't know. But what was driving me was...
Yeah, what do you mean?
Yeah, like, I just didn't care. I was like, not staying in here. My, you know, my baby's going to be... when he gets 5 years old, I'm getting out of here.
How are you going to get out?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I don't know. There was no way. That was just my feeling of, okay, this is what I'm striving for. I'm getting out of here before you get five. I'm getting out of here before Wit gets 12. So it's like I would do these things to myself. You know, it makes no sense, really. But this is the things that I would do sometimes
that's
in
like
my head.
Coping mechanisms.
Yeah, and I would just, you know, and I would just thrive for that and strive for that. You know what? This is what I'm going to do. And I would just keep working, you know, exercising, going and getting into things anything that I could do to help me learn things, get a skill, whatever it was that was keeping my mind occupied. That was a lot. That was part of it. And trying to keep my mind after so many years off of home because it was nothing at that point I could do. It would just put anxiety on me. And like you, it would let me down sometimes.
Yeah, that's how I felt.
It would let me down a lot of times. So at some point after so many decades, I had to stop even thinking about it. About y'all, I'm like, you know what? I was glad when y'all got grown.
I was glad when we got grown?
Yeah, I was.
You know who else was glad when we got grown?
Grandma.
Me.
No, you. I bet you were, right?
Because I didn't have to worry about relying on somebody else to do things that I wanted for myself.
Right. Yeah.
When I got my license. And
There's also a thing about bitterness. And that's what I was saying. It, you know, having spent so many years in prison away from people, that thing is mixed with bitterness, too.
I bet.
You know, so, you know, the relationships that you would have had, that you imagine you would have had, with your children, you know, and the effects of the sentence, because your children was also sentenced that way too, to all those years. Our family, your sisters, you know, are all traumatized because of it. And we all, you know, that's what I said, the euphoria that you feel when you're finally free is tinged with that that bitterness also, that you know, you didn't have to spend that many years in prison or be in prison at all, away from your children, away from your loved ones and people that you've never seen again alive.
Yeah.
You know, so Sherry, Pooh, and Whit all suffers at that loss also, you know, and you just deal with it rather than try to go to the bitter side about it, you know, and just be hopeful that those fences will mend too.
When mom came home first, one of my friends came over to the house and he and I were talking and we were talking, just casually talking, and I said, Rip, what year did this happen when we did so-and-so? Nah, Mike, that was back in 2000. Nah, Rip, that was back in 1990, so-and-so. And mom was looking like, this friend of mine he's been a friend of mine since the 90s, right? And I remember mom commenting on it about how much it impacted her that I had a friend for over 20-something years that she knew nothing about. Right. And I have a lot of friends like that. It like affected me when she was explaining to me how she felt about it. 40 years is a lifetime for some people. So, Mom, what do you hope for from the people?
I hope for the people who are really striving and trying to make an effort to do the right thing and realize mistakes that they've made, if they feel like they have made mistakes, and hope for the people who haven't done anything and who are truly are not guilty of whatever they were put in prison for, you know, for sure that they come home. It's a hope too that that our people are a survivor, our daughters, you know, can hopefully get some healing and try to, you know, do what they need to do to help them heal, you know, and you know, to be happy, to try to be happy. That's my hope for Whit and all the other people that who have been victimized, wronged, and it's particular close to our family. You know, so that's really heavy on me, and I really, really hope for that.
Yeah, and like Russell and Sharon and Teresa.
Yep.
And they have other siblings and they have aunts and family, and like I know they carry and have some of that bitterness you talk about. I hope they heal. A lot of talk about healing.
Well, society is traumatized, man. Look at them. Just, you know, drive on the road, man. These folks are on a hair trigger, man. They're on a hair trigger, you know. But anyway, getting back to Russell, man. Russell and his family. Be around them for 10 minutes, man. They are some of the kindest, most compassionate people we ever want to meet, man. Russell Maroon Schultz is one person and his family that if you meet his family, you can see where he got his spirit from. Hmm. His sisters, his daughters, his sons are all like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, you know, they all eat and drink from the same, you know, they, you can see that they go to the Ewa tree together,
mm-hmm.
and partake, and you know, that humanity that they feel, that compassion they feel. And like we had this program a few weeks ago, you know, we were talking about that people who are activists do so out of love. You know,
right.
People call them violent, but they do what they do out of love. They're on the streets out of love. You know, they're angry about something that happened, you know, but they do so. They don't particularly know that person, you know, but they know what they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
And they deserve humanity. They deserve justice. And, you know, these people speak out for it when these people can't speak out for it themselves. So, you know, and they're all really compassionate people.
Yeah, they are.
But before we close, I know it's getting close. I know what time has been up.
Okay, go ahead.
But I also want to just say a little bit about my, because sometimes I tend to overlook my family, my relatives, you know, who I really want healing for them too. My sisters and, you know, Mike's family and people who have, when we came home, they were the ones that were there for us. They were the ones that were there for us. Of course, not to mention you, but, and Robin, but, you know, I mean, there was nothing that they couldn't and didn't want to do for us. And I'm hoping for their healing too, because they also have been through a lot. Like, they've been through a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Everyone gets this, man. Everyone needs a taste of this. You know,
a taste of what? This
feeling that, you know, they get on a homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that homecoming was so nice, so wonderful after years of, you know, it's not like, the hug you get when you're released is not the hug you get on a visit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is different. You know, the feeling you get.
Vice versa.
Yeah, so.
The voice is different over the phone.
And everybody longs for that, believe me. When you see, you know, guys who are, you know, this guy was wrongfully convicted. He stayed in jail for 27 years and you see him at home. I used to look at that man. I said, you know what, man? I don't think I'd cry.
You don't think you cry?
I don't. Man, you know,
the emotion. Down your nose that day.
See, the Ren and Stimpy bubble joints, man, coming out your nose.
My nose was like a water faucet.
See, never thought that would, you know, but the emotions, man, the emotions that emanate from that. You, man, it is.
Yeah, you know, I thought you were going to be more anxious to get out of the prison building. I said, Dad, you ready to get out of here? You said, man, I want some more hugs, man. And I was thinking to myself, let's get out of here before they change their mind.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, you don't know how, until I was in that situation, I was always like they were going to come and take it back.
That's how I felt.
You know, I mean, when the cell I was in before your release, I was in parts of the building that I had never been in before.
Uh-huh.
I was in situations that I'd never been in before. The person that I went to see for the parole, and I said, yeah, I've been going through this situation for 10 years. I said, I've never seen you. She said, you know why? Because this is where you get the good news.
Mm. Well, like you said, we could do this all day, but we can't do this all day because we got other stuff to do and people got other stuff to do. Welcome home, Maroon.
Welcome home, Maroon.
Welcome home. Congratulations, Russell Schultz III and Sharon and Teresa, and to all y'all family members, I'm so happy for y'all. Oh my God, we done stood shoulder to shoulder on these streets fighting for both our parents and like for so many years, brothers and sisters. I'm so happy for y'all and I can't wait to see y'all the next time I see y'all. I talked to y'all today, but I can't wait to see y'all and give y'all a hug, you know, and I can't wait to see your pop if I get a chance to see your pop. You know what I'm saying? And I can't wait to continue this work with y'all. Much love to y'all. Y'all already know.
Peace, y'all. Y'all just take it all in. Take it all in. I'm so happy for y'all, man. I know how it feels. I know the feeling.
All right. And to the people out there, all of the supporters, Black Rat, Yane, Gabe, Crystal, and Celine, and Ghani, and I ain't gonna try to name everybody because that would be ridiculous, but I gotta say somebody like Brett Grody and the Abolitionist Law Center and everybody that worked so hard to make sure that this thing happened. I thank y'all for it and I love y'all for it. Thank y'all much.
Thank you.
Everybody that's listening out there.
And of course, Pam.
Oh my God.
Pam is always in there, always at the top.
A warrior woman, Pam.
Warrior one.
And, you know, and to all of the people that's listening,
yeah,
who like to hear the truth and who like to hear inspirational, the work that we do. And this is what we do it for. You know, thank y'all for listening. If you like what you heard, tell your friends, help them get on the move with us. And make sure you're following the podcast so you never miss an episode. And we're going to be talking more about this because we got more to update you on. So until next week, we'll see you on the other side. Peace out.